We'll do it live!
You are listening to the AMC Report with your host, Ryan Dawson.
This is Ryan Dawson of AMC Report. I'm talking with Joachim Fjors, who is currently over in Eastern Europe. And we wanted to discuss something about false paradigms as well as stigmas attached to conspiracies and the different types of problems people run across when trying to present a theory about 9/11 or a war or any type of covert activity. There seems to be a number of different types of stigmas associated to that, and there seems to be many layers of false paradigms within any kind of political subject. So please enjoy the discussion. Yeah, we were talking about 9/11 on Facebook, and I can't believe I haven't interviewed anybody about this already, but there's a huge stigma about talking about that subject because of all the kooks that go around saying all kinds of ridiculous stuff. And what's happened is there are a lot of intelligent people who reject even discussing 9/11 because the first people who've already approached them on the subject have been these lunatics. And so now they don't want to hear it because they think, oh, you're just going to talk about Rothschilds and Illuminati and whatever, you know. And so you have to individually sit people down and say, no, I'm not one of those.
Right.
Go over it, yeah. And so I know right. I've been dealing with this, and I imagine you've been dealing with this too.
I tell you, I think that when people sit and they look at the facts and they, you know, rational people who connect the dots can see, you know, the elements of the conspiracy. And I think, Ryan, that it's the word conspiracy that in particularly American culture, Western culture, it just, rings people's alarms, even though in criminal law, something like 90% of criminal convictions are based upon conspiracy charges. And there's often a lack of physical or direct evidence, and they rely on circumstantial evidence, which are the, you know, primary ingredients of something like 90% of white-collar criminal convictions that involve conspiracy charges. So there you go. It's
and we've had government conspiracies, too. I mean, just say covert operation. I mean, any covert operation by any intelligence agency, it doesn't have to be American, is a conspiracy because you've got a whole bunch of people paid to lie to everybody about what they're doing, which under any other context would be criminal. They assassinate people. They do, you know, steal. They run drugs, guns, etc., which... Yeah. Ought to be called terrorism, ought to be called conspiracy, but it's not when we do it, because we're the good guys.
Right. Yeah, right. So people who get into this black hat, white hat mentality, and I think a lot of people, you know, they have good reasons to love what they think their country stands for, and they grew up in the U.S., and they have had mostly maybe positive experiences, and, you know, they
watched Rocky IV.
They watched Rocky IV. They were instilled at an early age with a sense of duty and patriotism, and maybe they themselves or had family members serve in the armed forces and with distinction. And you know, and then when they hear people say things about the government, they're like, "That's my government." People, you know, they personally own that, and they don't want to hear things. Even though I think that the best patriots are those who are willing to question these narratives that. You know, about especially 9/11. I mean, that's one of the biggest crimes that has been committed in the last, you know, decade or two, right? So,
well, that's one of the stigmas, is no one wants to believe in something so horrible. But I think from my experience, the greater stigma is there are a lot of people who are willing to believe, oh yeah, government lies, no problem. Iran-Contra, they lied. Watergate, they lied. Gulf of Tonkin, they lied. They lied about the war in Iraq. They understand that. But when it comes to 9/11, they go, well, no, that was the Muslims, and that's the story. Because the alternative theory, not even theory, the alternative garbage they've heard on that has just been vague paths to nowhere, Illuminati, NWO, globalists, whatever, nobody, no names, no documents, and over-focuses on the physical collapse of the buildings and ignores everything else. And there's no way to reach these people after, if the kooks get there first, you have to spend an enormous amount of time proving that you're not one of those people and that is not your argument. It's kind of like talking about the Holocaust. First, you got to prove you're not a Nazi before you can talk about any aspect of revisionism. You have to prove you're not a white supremacist, you know, and right. that's kind of what happens with 9/11. You have to prove you're not crazy. You're right, not an Alex Jonestown retard before you can even start.
Right. So, and that's sort of, I think, part of the task, right? And I think you rightly narrowed in on that. And what I've done in the past is I've shown people your work on the subject, and I say, hey, you know what, these are the facts, and you can check these out yourself. There's no, I think that what happens is that there's a lot of positive energy around exposing what happened around 9/11, and people, like you said, they have, they might have background about Iran-Contra, about, dirty wars, about, other false flags or hoaxes, Gulf of Tonkin and so forth.
Yeah, older people were alive when these things happened, and they remember. Right, and this was prior to the internet even, and they still got it.
and so what happens is, like, tends to happen is people tend to, like, pile up all of their, their other things that they've uncovered, and a person is not prepared for a total paradigm shift. So they're going to experience this cognitive dissonance, and it's like, let's just look at 9/11, and you know what, like, I'm not an architect or an engineer, and I can't, like, analyze the forensics of, like, dust particles and stuff.
Yeah, but you can understand guys caught in a van packed with bombs. You don't have to get into this hair-splitting stuff about nanothermite and all that when you have people caught filming the first plane, and then, real obvious stuff that doesn't make it to the forefront because they're either focused on just academic minutiae or worse, they're completely lost into thinking the Bavarian death cult or whatever controls the earth.
Right. And the thing is that, like, I'm not talking about the Bavarian death cult, but, like, other people's sort of, like, pet issues, like, could very well be true, or they, but the problem is that, it's like,
here's I just point out, it's not a secret. AIPAC does it right in your face. The IMF does it right in your face. Like, the World Bank's not a secret organization. They do predatory loans to the third world right out in the open. Like,
it's right out in the open. And it's one of those things. It's like when things are, like, hidden in plain view. Right. And I try to dig deep, Ry, and I try to look at, and I'm not like a psychoanalyst or anything, but I'm, like, trying to understand what are the mechanisms in people's, thinking process. And I think you're right that the kooks get there first, right? You got crazies, and then you've got, sometimes the way, I know that in the West, being considered polite is really important, and we have, like, certain rules especially, like, in the U.S. that, like, with company, polite company, there's two things you don't talk about: politics and religion. But in other parts of the world, people can talk about these things.
That's true. There's a stigma just on anything political. And I think that's why so many people are stuck in the left-right paradigm, is that if you can't talk about it, then sometimes they can't move past that by themselves. And you'll see, where did the anti-war left go once Obama became president, for example. You know they understand it. You know that war is wrong because of all the dead children. It's not because Bush did it. It's because whoever did it. It doesn't matter. It's wrong because you lied and said these people were going to attack the UK with sarin gas, or that they had yellow cake uranium from Niger, or any of the lies about Iraq. That's why.
Right. I mean, that's the thing, is that when a person digs in and looks at the actual facts surrounding what happened, it becomes pretty clear. Now, the problem is that I think also is that people are looking for, like, maybe directly signed orders, or people might be looking for, like, a video recorded, like, meeting between people, like,
smoking cigars at the Legion of Doom.
Smoking cigars, yeah. Kind of great grainy film and stuff. And it's like, nobody from the Lincoln Savings and Loan scandal would be in prison. None of the, back when laws were enforced and stuff like that, like, none of these white collar crooks would have ever done time, and not enough of them have done time, don't get me wrong, but there'd be virtually no criminal convictions involving conspiracy to commit larceny, conspiracy to commit murder, conspiracy.
Well, that's a good example, that white collar crime. Look at the housing bubble fiasco, where the rating agencies gave AAA ratings to what they knew was absolute crap, and they admitted to each other, look at the bullshit I just sold. But technically, they could say, well, we didn't lie. We were just really bad at our job. And
right, we were really incompetent.
It's
got
technically
really
not illegal to just suck at giving ratings. So,
right.
It was totally a conspiracy. They definitely did it on purpose.
Right. And it's like, things don't happen like this stochastically in some, like, you know, fit of random stochastic rage. And you just kind of, you know, I've never, like, tripped over myself and then fallen into, like, $1 million. You know what I'm saying? I never have, like, yeah, accidents. Made a bunch of money, you know. I
was so incompetent, but I walked away with billions.
Right. And it's like, you know, but in the past, when there were these convictions, and they haven't always gone down. I mean, the U.S. has had not the best history in terms of its kleptocracy, right? But you know, but when there are charges, those are the elements of a case. But I think that a lot of people don't. I mean, there's a lot of, people in the United States are very intelligent, but a lot of them are not very educated. And even if they watch, like, shows like CSI or Criminal Intent or something, they don't always put together that's how criminal cases get built.
Yeah, there's the disbelief because, oh, it's too big, it couldn't get away with it idea. And then there's the one where, oh, you people think it's all... space aliens or whatever. They're talking about two different types of stigmas, two conspiracies.
Right.
But you can point out prior, known, and admitted conspiracies. All the stuff the CIA did all through the 70s, 80s, 60s, and 50s even, that they were busted doing. You know, running cocaine into Nicaragua and so on. Oh, yeah, okay. But then when you say 9/11, like, oh, no, this couldn't happen.
Right,
you're talking
right.
about the war on terror, which replaced the Cold War to justify spending trillions of dollars. A lot of motivation to lie.
Right.
And there's just so much evidence on 9/11. And I'm glad you give people my films and work, but it's almost like word of mouth, the way that spreads. Because
right.
I'm not trying to scare the shit out of everyone. And fear
right.
sells. Like this Ebola crap.
Right.
I went back and thought about it. Okay, around year 2000 or so, there was Y2K in 99. Then there was mad cow disease. Then there was SARS.
Right.
And before that, West Nile and Lyme disease. And then bird flu, avian bird flu, swine flu, pig flu, H1N1. The ice is melting. Fukushima radiation is going to get you. Just one story after another of total bullshit.
Right.
I mean, exaggerations. It's not like Lyme disease doesn't exist, and it's not like mad cow disease. But, you know, you can't have an epidemic of a disease that's not airborne like that, or in the case of bird flu, unless you're messing with chickens or something, you're not going to get it. And the regular flu kills far more people. And so this is like Ebola, and then you see that with conspiracy stuff, too, about what they're doing to your food, or you're going to a FEMA camp, or the globalists, and they just like, you have no control over shit in your life, and then and buy my video. You know, that'll spread. That'll spread fast, but when you calmly say, actually, they're not in control of shit, it's this cabal of people who lied their asses off, and... you know, the press went with it because they're owned by the Pentagon, and it's in the Pentagon's own financial interests to start conflicts. That simple. They're not controlling everything. But, yeah.
Right. Yeah, you see, you don't have to, like, try to, like, get a, you know, hidden camera at Bohemian Grove and, you know what I mean, and start, right, and, like, you know, lip read and stuff like that. It's like, it's, you know, just connect the dots. It's, I think it's like, one thing I think that you've done actually is that you understand that most of this goes word of mouth, and the whole thing with social networking and Twitter and the Arab Spring and color revolution phenomenon is because of word of mouth. Because I think actually it's a more powerful tool when people hear from colleagues and peers and friends information. Because I think people increasingly
it's stronger. It's slower, but it's stronger. Yeah.
They increasingly have a healthy distrust for these, top-down media sources that, don't have a lot of credibility. And I think once you get a vocal minority of people who are like, come on, and they might include a little ridicule and say, come on, man, you can't believe this. And then people kind of feel embarrassed to rely on mainstream sources. And they should not use mainstream sources. You've seen that a lot with the
Israeli-Palestinian conflict 10 years ago. You said anything against what is, Israel's ethnic colonies, or if you even acknowledge there were ethnic colonies, people were shocked.
Right.
They wouldn't believe it. Oh, no, they're not doing that. They're good, and they're in the Bible and this and that. And nowadays, after enough dead kids, even the evangelicals are starting to turn their backs on them. So that's screwed up. You don't need Jesus to tell you killing kids is wrong. All you need is common sense. And the difference is before, it would happen, it would be reported, not on TV, but it would be reported and written, but you couldn't see it. And what's happening now, because of Facebook and Live Leak and all that, is you actually see the dead kids. You actually see the hospitals that are destroyed and all that. And with the pictures and the video medium, now you have a lot more people speaking out against Israeli aggression than ever before. Before, it was mainly just the victims. Palestinians or maybe Muslims who identified with it, but no one else. And you'd see that with a lot of crap, like blacks complaining about crime against blacks, Indians for Indians, but not a lot of crossover. But with the internet, you're seeing people talk about Ukraine, Gaza, Iraq, Iran, all the same guy or girl all at once. Injustice is injustice. So people are breaking out of this sort of factional loyalty BS, and they're realizing injustice to anyone anywhere is injustice, period. And people get to see it and have that emotional impact. And I've seen that. So I think you're right there. We're turning a corner on the alternative media too, because a lot of people realize that shit's just as wacky as the mass media. They scare the hell out of people and they just tell them a bunch of nonsense. So I'm talking about Jonestown.
And it's ad revenue. Right.
Yeah.
It's
Google's going to kill you with the flash rate of their light bulbs.
and that gets lumped in with people who are like, hey, look, you had Pearl and Wolfowitz and Faith and the Office of Special Plans, and people are like, oh, come on, man, that's like, like the UN, NWO. And I'm like, no. I mean,
OSP was a real office in the defense.
It was a real office. People had names. They worked there. They, went through the wave the security guard in the morning every day with their, Starbucks or whatever, and sat in their office, and they were on the phone with the mirror office in Tel Aviv, and, coordinated.
Doug Feith's partner in Feith and Zell is Mark Zell, who's an Israeli settler.
Right. These are some of the most cantankerously vicious people that, in modern history. I mean, it's like the amount of lying, and it's like I think that's also, I think that's also part of it, right? Is that I think because most people are good, it's hard to imagine that there are that. It's kind of a scary idea.
Yeah, no one could act like that. Yeah. You kind of have to meet someone like that. I met someone like that in college who was just a total psychopath. And then I realized, he's not like he did this on purpose, but just from knowing him, I realized, gosh, there are people like that. And I would say, I'm not going to say his name, but I was like, would so-and-so do that? Oh, yeah. And then so would Pearl, and so would Wolfowitz and Feith and Libby and all these people. Oh, yeah, they'd absolutely do that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, maybe that's a kind of a good approach I'm sure most people have had that boss or have had that, ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend or have had that...
Yeah, redhead or something. No,
person they've had to deal with who's Oh, you know, right, yeah, and had to deal with some soulless person, and you know, it's like, well, you know, who are the people who this culture has said, you know, look at the movies in the 80s and how the whole cultural war was done, and with like Color of Money, Secret to My Success, and you know, basically promoted this idea that, like, you know, driving a Ferrari and getting rich was like the most important thing, and if you can, you know, lie, cheat, steal, and even kill somebody, like, it's all good, you know, so long as, you know, you're, you know, Tom Cruise or whatever, or you know what I mean, like, yeah, yeah. The whole thing was just so weird. And I mean, you didn't see that like in prior generations, and you didn't see that like so much like in other parts of the world, you know, like I think that people
see the demonization of American Indians slowly move over to the Arabs once the Indians were polished off. It was all the early right. Hollywood was Western, kill the Redskin stuff. And then if you see the real Arabs, they're always hijacking planes or terrorists or something, you know?
Yeah, what was constantly. The movie? True Lies was a big one. And, well, I remember, like, as a kid, you know, I'm 36 years old, and we used to have, like, WWF wrestling cartoons and stuff like that, and it was like Hulk Hogan and the Iron Sheik and Junkyard Dog and Ivan or something, and it was basically though like the evil wrestlers was like an Iranian guy and a Russian guy
and a Scottish guy.
Rowdy Roddy Piper, right? And so you've got like, what do you have, like the Scottish referendum, the, you know, Iran nuclear program, and, you know, Russia, whether they're communist or capitalist, it doesn't matter.
At that time, he was from the Soviet Union, I think. Nikolai Volkov. It was still USSR in the 80s.
It was. But yeah, it was.
Yeah, but that's fine. That's exactly where that kind of crap belongs, is in like pro wrestling or comic books. It's fine because it's pro wrestling and comic books, but
right.
In the real world, you have to rise above that. And Roddy Piper was really entertaining, and he did a movie called, what was it, They Live, I think? Yeah, great cult film.
That's a great film, and he finds the glasses, and he sees everyone as like all the evil people are like, you know, there's people who've had experiences like that, you know, under certain conditions where they can see kind of, you know, they're better able.
Well, it's just like, see, the conspiracy star would take that literally, like aliens are among us. But the film was good in the sense that he's looking at these advertisements and he sees the basic message pervasive in everything is buy more, obey, reproduce, things like that.
You know, right.
To break down your self-esteem to get you to try and purchase one instead. And it was just well done. And his line about bubblegum.
Yeah,
best
it was
cheesy
great.
Line ever.
Yeah, I think that's a great film, and you're right. Like, you know,
that
some
should be
people
redone.
Take
that would be a moneymaker if somebody redid They Live.
Definitely, that would be a great film to redo. I think it's like it gets frustrating, and I'm not, you know, I don't give up or anything like that, and I keep doing what I do. But it's like, I believe that people can figure these things out, and you know, it's I think, you know, sometimes it wears on your patience though, but it's like, you know, I felt like
about the anthrax case. I did all this work and just proved it, you know, and still
mm-hmm.
people go, oh yeah, and a lot of dissenters on 9/11 at first they'll agree with me on Iraq and anthrax already, and eventually they'll agree with me on 9/11 privately, but they still don't want to say it publicly because they don't want to be associated with the weirdos, and it's really not going to do their career any good, you know. So maybe privately they'll tell people about it, but they don't. It's just there's such a stigma about it because of Jones that they don't want you to think you believe a missile at the Pentagon or something crazy, so they just don't say it. You know, they won't talk about what really happened.
Yeah, you know, this is actually something that I've written about in relation to the, you know, war in Ukraine. But it is, you know, that what it is basically in social psychology, there's like this mechanism. It's called like false consensus fallacy. And basically, like, you know, if you actually talk to people, you know, there's a slim majority of people are like, yeah, like the official story on 9/11 is bunk, and you know, probably involve people in government, right?
But there's a limiting effect because they think other people think.
There you go. They think other people don't think it. Right.
And they don't want to come out with it unless they think they'll be in the majority. We have idiots voting like that. Oh, I like so and so, but I'm going to vote for my second best choice because that's what I think everyone else is doing. But if all those people knew how many people went through that same process, realize that you guys are the majority.
Exactly. I think the 9/11 phenomenon works a lot in a similar way. You know, it's, and the voting, the case of voting and is like evidence, is like proof of how this mechanism in social psychology operates, right? And it's I think the stuff you were saying about self-esteem and advertising is actually connected to why people are, you know, are overly conformist and fall for this false consensus fallacy, because it's like they already feel like they're not smart enough, that they're not rich enough, that they're not good looking enough. They already feel like inadequate because of all this like bullshit advertising and marketing. And then it's like, you know, they don't want to be the crazy guy who, you know, isn't rich, and you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I want to add one. But it is fear. Again, the same reason the stories about Ebola and everything sell so well is the same reason everything sells, is even, you know, get the skin cream or you're going to be ugly and you won't get the girl or the guy or whatever. You get this or you're going to fail. You have to have this item or you won't be cool. And it's a sense of fear, like you need these things or you're not worth anything. And even if they don't even like the product itself, they think other people do like it and they want that envy from others. They want that external validation to say, well, I got the new iPhone. I didn't really want it, but, you know, I didn't want to not have it. And someone say, well, are you using iPhone 4 instead of 6 or whatever it is now? You know, so they want to look like they're up to date on stuff. Purely for their peers. It might not even, and some people might legitimately just want the thing, right? But there are people who buy stuff because of pressure from outside.
Right. Yeah, I mean, when you see people lined up to buy an iPhone and stuff, and I'm like, what is going on with this?
What's the difference between that last one? And they don't even know, usually.
They don't even know. And it's like, it's not even like the smartest phone you can get anyway. And
I was just making an example, you know, like,
I think that's a great example, right? Because it's like, I mean, it is an issue of kind of like keeping up with the Joneses and perception, and people are under this constant self-esteem attack and they have careers. And it's like, you know what, like in the U.S., like people can get fired for like any reason. And like, you can see, like, you know, I mean, you've lived abroad and you see that, you know, how different cultures operate, and you know that like in the U.S. like people have like their kind of like work front and they have like their life front, and it's true like in other
like
places.
Look, I got colored paper covering stuff, like I'm beyond caring about that, you know. I don't comb my hair, I don't wear a tie, you know, because my information is solid. I don't have to bank on hiding behind a tie. Like it is what it is, and I could reach more if I were to dress differently or present differently. But then I'd also have to dress differently and present differently. It's annoying. And like, I don't want, it's hot in Japan in the summer and stuff. I'm not going to get all up in that, you know, because I want people to move past that. Like temporarily, I would get a bigger audience. But if I can get people to realize that the message is the message, regardless of what the person looks like, then I have another victory.
Yeah,
I have
a
little bit of a Southern accent, but I'm not a moron and I'm not a racist and I don't fit this stereotypes, you know, so that's good. And so I could lose that, but I said, oh, no, I'll pour it on thick if I can help people move past another taboo, another thing that they have that's so stupid and judgmental. And so that's my goal, breaking down taboos. And maybe I'm foolish for that, but I think in the long run that's going to work out the best.
Look, you know what, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, you were talking earlier about turning a corner in social media and social networking, and it's, you know, it seems to me like that with social networking, you know what, it's like not my phone, and I honey, will you get your phone?
And whatever.
So basically, what what happened is that like people are kind of like when they see like the white shoe boys come in and they've got their like little fancy suit on and stuff like that, and they're from, you know, the
where very respectable.
Very respectable guy.
Look how tight his hair is. And, ooh.
Yeah. Right. And then, you know, and it's like it perpetuates that. And but yeah, I think people are kind of like getting past that because they're like, great, oh, another expert, another policy wonk, another, you know, none of these people, right, who's going
to
like.
It limits dissent, too, because not everybody can afford a studio full of TV screens or whatever behind them. Or a setup, you know, like, oh, you can up your game right. Like that. I'm like, yes, you can. And sometimes that's good for certain things. But if you hold that as a standard, the person that's just starting or whatever, what are they supposed to do? They can't go out and buy all that stuff just so that people can hear their message in the medium they're used to with a big desk in front of you and, you know, some background behind you. What I see that all the time, like Jesse Ventura's kid, he's got like 20 fucking TV screens behind him and graphics and stuff. I'm like, what's on those TV screens? There's nothing on there. They're not even there. It's probably a green screen, you know? Like, what's the point?
It's the magic in the pool room, you know?
Jonestown has it. He's got a screen, like monitors behind him. Like, he turns around and watches 7 TVs at a time, like the evil villain stroking a cat in his chair or something. I've never seen that. I don't understand. It's like, oh, there's some control room behind me where we watch all these monitors. And everyone does it. Even Corbett, who I like, a lot of his reports, he's got like 20 TV screens behind him. I'm like, what are all these TV things for? Are you? Like, does that mean you think you're in a newsroom? Like, you can't even possibly pay attention to all those things anyway. But it's not the NSA.
No, it's
but, you know, so when people get on my case, I'm like, look, that's my book cover. This says, Stop Bombing Gaza. There's a bunch of books
right.
I read, so I kind of am indirectly recommending these, you know? And
right.
Then I just got this covering up, you know, clothes and ties and whatever I'm using my shelf in my room for. So
cover.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's paper.
Yeah,
I think it looks
right.
like Spider-Man colors, blue and red, because
right.
I like
yes.
him. So there, stick it.
Yeah.
Yeah, people can't move past the presentation. And I'm not
right.
saying just be sloppy or just be lazy or whatever. But when you're talking
sure.
about activism, I don't have a studio, so I'm not going to fake like I do, you know. And
right.
But getting the message out is definitely the most important thing. And, yeah, if I could justify the capital to build such a thing way in the future, maybe I would do that if I thought that would get the message out more. But I would still leave all my old stuff up to show, look, nothing changed but the background. And you've got
right.
to get past that, whether the person has a tie on or not, or a big desk or a TV screen, whatever. You've got to get past this Hollywood gloss.
Right,
because that,
right.
that's just stupid.
Yeah, you know, I think it's
age
like...
Age, too. Like, I look young. If a kid said something, if they're 12, look, if they're right, they're right.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I you know, it's I remember like reading a comment section and stuff, or it was on Moon of Alabama, and you know, someone was saying like, well, the guy, he's really, really young. I'm like, I was like, cool, you know, like, but I was
that's
like,
awesome.
Man, but
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, you know, but I'm like pushing 40 years old over here, right? But I just, you know, I just don't eat a lot of crap. But it's you know, what it is like this, man. Like,
I just had a kid. I say kid. He's probably like 20. But it might be younger, but Will Porter, and he just wrote an article on antiwar.com, and he just sort of went over a list of the pre-war lies in Iraq and how it connected to 9/11, da da da, and he put War by Deception on the bottom. So now antiwar.com is linking to War by Deception. And he thanked myself and Scott Horton for information. And people like, and just says Will Porter, and they look at his article, and it's really well done. I helped him with a little just consultation, but he wrote it by himself. And but it seems like he's 40 something year old guy, probably, right?
Right, right.
Like, no,
right,
it's
right.
like just getting out of high school.
that's great. That's, you know, people gotta get past their hangups about like, oh, the person is, you know, this or he's that. I mean, you know, it's like where you get like a black guy and something, people assume he's gonna start talking about things that only affect
exclusively black issues, or my
right,
favorite,
black
the
issues,
black
right.
community.
Yeah, I think there hasn't been a black community for like over 100 something years.
It's
man.
Like saying the left-handed community. Oh, yeah, because they all agree on whatever it is because they look alike, so they have to.
Right. Well, you know, it's kind of like, you know, kind of getting to the thing about people's hang-ups and getting past some of these barriers that get in the way of people understanding 9/11, right? It's like, you know, what happened, I mean, what in I think like something like half the population lives in the, you know, suburban and like smaller towns and cities, and then the other half lives in like Chicago, New York, San Francisco, LA, you know, Dallas, Houston, so forth. And the people who lived in major cities who were kind of like plugged into stuff that was going on tended to be like on the left. And then people like who were like from other like kind of like suburban or, you know, rural development. Were tend to be like not like Nixon conservatives, but they were like into like libertarianism and other like things that were radical, but like not like on the Marxist left by any stretch at all. And what something I noticed that happened about 10 years ago or 12 years ago after about 9/11 was, I think, one of the defining moments when like the so-called radical left like totally dropped the ball and they lined up behind Chomsky and the sort of like, no, we're only going to talk about the ruling class in the abstract. Like, we're only going to talk about it like in the sociological sense, but we're not going to name names. We're not going to say how the ruling class operates. We're just going to want to
be specific.
Just vague, just nice and safe and academic, and no one's careers are going to get, you know, all our professors are going to make
Chomsky also pushed the Iraq war is about oil bullshit. And not just ignoring all the pre-war lies where their origin came from, because it certainly wasn't the oil companies. And yet, instead, it's easy to slogan. It's easy to write no war for oil. But it's hard to explain what really went down. So,
How do you explain that the United States government did things that were almost narrowly and specifically in Israel's foreign policy interests, I mean, or regional hegemonic goals, really?
Explaining the massive overlap between the military-industrial complex and foreign aid, and just how the whole gambit of perpetuating religious conflict is a way of sustaining conflict, which means profits.
Right.
And you're talking in the mechanized world, the more and more the military has gotten mechanized since World War II, you're talking about $500 million aircrafts and things for one F-35, which is jointly made by the Israelis and the United States. They've incorporated themselves together in this MIC. The seed money for PNAC was from Lockheed Martin, which is an American company. Blah, 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 blah. But it takes a while, as we were saying. And, yeah, so you can't really sloganeer it the way you can no war for oil. But you get people doing the right thing for the wrong reason. So, yeah, oppose the war, good. You're on my team. You don't know what's going on, but I'll take it as a win.
Sure, right. And but then what happened was that, you know, I feel stupid, I can't think of the name, but in 2009, a very good study was done, like a research article. It was like published in a pretty good peer-reviewed journal, and I'll send you the link later when I find it. But basically this person proved, like, first they did a statistical regression analysis of like the anti-war movement, where the funding came from, and then how after Obama got elected, it dried up, and how
it was totally an anti-Bush movement.
It was an anti-Bush movement.
With an anti-war theme, but they weren't really morally or emotionally opposed to war. They just didn't like Republicans, which they associated with greedy rich white guys or whatever. They have some. It's a cult on the anti, rather than the pro. They're against Republicans, so now they're against whatever Republicans do. Right. However, same actions under a different banner, well, that's okay, because now the war is humanitarian. We have to go bomb ISIS. We have to do this. Right. We have to bomb Libya. Right. We have to send drones to Pakistan, Yemen, they're back in Iraq, whatever. So, yeah, it's based on hate, really. And I've talked to former Obama supporters who have seen the light and totally oppose his policies now for the same reason they oppose Bush's. And I said, were you ever really against, you know, what they were doing, or were you just against Bush? And the ones who are honest about it say, I hated Republicans. I knew that's what it was.
Yeah.
And vice versa. People who hate Democrats, but right. They're okay.
It's like team stuff. It's like, you know, like Lakers versus Celtics or whatever. You know, it's like, and it's that tribal thing. And that shit gets manipulated, excuse my French, and it, you know, gets manipulated and just kind of like same divide and conquer. And, you know, why, you know, and people kind of, they line up and they're like, it's kind of like when you're in a gang.
But I think Europeans are more nationalistic than the U.S., sports team wise. If there's one Canadian fighter, Irish fighter or whatever, or player, that they're all, you know, totally behind the person.
U.S.
a little bit more divided, less, you know, automatic on for their team like that. But you'll see Europeans criticizing Americans like, but you're so guilty of the same thing.
it's all it is that in Europe, because like they had maybe a little bit better of an education system, and then also like the, you know, the in the last two centuries, like the trade union movement, kind of like radical left, you know, not like the so-called cultural Marxist radical left, but like the real kind of like wage and labor and rights and stuff like that movement was so big in Europe, and people kind of were instilled with this idea that there's like people on top don't have your, you know, your interests, you know, and it's people, they called them workers because it was like within this Marxist paradigm, right? But I try to get past the paradigms and the ideologies and look at like what people were feeling and really thinking. And yeah, in Europe, there was kind of a higher level of discourse because people kind of like, you know, what they saw like, you know, well, these people are in charge and they control the banks and, you know, they're saying the police to break the strike. So they made the connection between like the police state, the corporations, and the government.
I think kind their like, press is less theatrical. Also.
Right.
I mean, it sucks, but it's better than American press.
It's a degree better.
It's easy to do, though.
Right. Yeah. I think I'm not beating up on Americans or anything by any stretch, you know, but I mean, like some of the best inventors and stuff like that, and, you know, ideas have come from the United States, but.
Mm-hmm. The U.S. has a wide bell curve.
It's like. I think one of the things that has like happened is that like something that keeps Americans together. Like, I mean, you know, like, I mean, the French have their Frenchness and the Italian have their Italianness, and Americans are like this melting pot. And well, there's a constitution and there's like a flag and there's like four or five songs or something that you hear around 4th of July. But there isn't like an American, you know, maybe one could say like country Western music or something like that from 50 years ago before it got like overly commercialized.
America's a series of subcultures.
Right.
And they don't really have a macro culture other
than,
you know,
of subcultures,
blowing
exactly.
shit up.
So, right.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, no,
It's funny, but
you know,
it's not. Yeah.
It is, you know, but it's a problem. I think it's a solvable problem. And, I mean, like, when people are positive about their identities, when, like, you know, when Irish or like Scots-Irish Celt people like get into like their, you know, rediscovering when like that river dance shit got all big, you know, they kind of got into that, or like when, you know, when Italian Americans like realize that they're, you know, they.
This is the key point though. I think like the cultural identity versus government. So it's fine to be proud of your language, your literary works, your music, your culinary things, your technological advancements, whatever that have come out of your culture, the arts and philosophy and so on. But society is not government. Government is the opposite of society, really. It's a drain, a parasite. And so, but the government calls itself the government, the American government, the Irish government, the whatever. And so it tries to associate itself to all the accomplishments of that society. But most of those accomplishments have come in spite of government, not because of government.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
And so they take credit for all the good things, the inventions, the innovations in the arts and musics and whatever, foods, etc., that people think of are what makes this area unique from this other area isn't very much. It's basically a little bit different history, and, you know, they eat this and listen to this, and they do, you know, have this custom and that. But basically, we all aren't that different from one another.
Yeah, we all.
But governments certainly are. There's some governments that don't allow women to drive. There's a, you know, the law can be drastically different.
Right.
But nobody
right.
has pride in their law. They have pride in their culture. And when they meet, what they mean by that is things from the society, not government.
Right. I think that's a critical thing. Is people tend to conflate government and society. I mean, I got recently into a little, you know, learning experience scenario, and a person
was anti-nationalist too. If you're proud to be Eastern European or Irish or whatever, they're going to conflate you with like Nazism or whatever. Like, oh, you're just so pro-German or something. Well,
right.
I'm not pro-German government.
I'm
not even German, but I'm just saying.
Right.
You could be pro other things that have come out of the German culture. And so, but people in Europe, I feel like, are really slapped with guilt if they have any sense of like regional pride in their culture, because it gets associated with having pride in their government, which they associate with World War II.
For the Germans, it's been hammered in them for like 60 years that like that there's nothing good German. You know, you have good engineers and that's it. Make a fine car.
But only for building weapons.
No, you know, you're not allowed to be proud of being German, or not allowed to, like, you know, look at German history. And you know, it can only be seen as a series of catastrophic nationalist disasters. And, you know, and but it's like, you know, I think I do see people getting past that. I see like I see lots of Germans now who, you know, are not neo-Nazis. They despise, you know, Hitler. They despise that part of the history. And they're like, but you know what? The American bases are still in Germany, and why?
Right,
you know,
right.
We're not Nazis. Like, not even like my grandfather is dead now, and you know, he wasn't even a Nazi. He just got conscripted to be in the army, and like these American bases aren't filled with grandfathers. Like, these are dudes in their 30s and 40s. Like, you know, these are living. This is happening now. Why is the U.S. occupying Germany today? Why is the German gold in the U.S. like, why
they're still occupying Okinawa and other parts of Japan? Like,
still under occupation.
Japan's not going to attack Hawaii again. Come on.
They're not going to do it. It's just not going to happen, you know.
Clearly.
But it's there, and it's, so it's like, and it's like you can see how all of these are connected, right? So like to 9/11, but I think that 9/11 can be a good starting point because it you know, to understand it, you can stay focused on 9/11, but you can point out all of, you know, the patterns, the history, that this is how things work. And I think that the reason that 9/11 is such a difficult thing, precisely because it requires a paradigmatic shift, and I think that it's almost like a test, you know. It requires people, we've gone through this, to break out of this like fear of what people are going to think about you. It requires people to like not take shortcuts. Like, well, you know, David Icke's freaking reptilian, you know, and all that stuff does not related to you know, what happened on 9/11. You know, so it requires people to basically think for themselves, which I think is hard for people to do because we don't have a lot of experience doing that. Even when we like go buy something, like the salesman is telling us what to think, right? So, you know, and so I think 9/11 is like one of the best cases that can take people from, you know, it really changes people's worldview. And I think that is what people fight and kick and scream to resist, because
also, if you can understand it, understanding the systems of privateering, modern day privateering, how terrorist cells actually work, what the CIA actually does is basically, you know, guns for hire for corporate America, or nowadays multinationals. And you can, your whole view of history becomes very clear all of a sudden, going back to the Eisenhower administration and beyond. It all makes sense once you realize how it works. But otherwise, they seem so unrelated, there's never really a clear picture. Why the U.S. was in Vietnam, there's no real resource there or anything. Why do they invade Grenada? You know, it doesn't make any sense until you understand this sort of banana republic method between the banks and the military and corporate America, and how the CIA is, you know, the management system of all that. And If you know that, though, or if you knew that before 9/11 happened, you would have figured 9/11 out much quicker.
Right.
But, you know, this isn't something in the school system. It's not something on television. So you have to have people who are students of history, usually, or philosophy or something, to put it together and explain it. It's not your IR people. That's professional bullshit artists, you know?
But
people studying history and things like that, that's where you should go. And people just aren't reading books anymore. And this info is on the web, but so is a lot of misinformation and disinformation. So we really have an uphill battle. But truth does prevail. Because once someone knows what's going on, there's no reversal.
Right. You can't unlearn the truth.
Exactly. You can't.
Right.
Once you know about Santa, you're done, you know? So
it's done.
You can pop a myth and then they don't go back.
That's right. So what do you think?
That's our advantage.
I agree. I mean, I've never met a person who has, like, you know, basically there's a lot of, like, we got into psychological mechanisms why people can't look at what happened on 9/11, and there's a lot of social pressures and stuff. There's a lot of disinformation and kind of like how people associate certain things with certain, it's like mostly like by association that people are turned off by it. It's like they go, it's kind of like when you like go to like a restaurant and you're like, oh, but you know that like this, like, you know, that the chef like from 5 years ago, like you got fired because there was roaches in the soup and you're like, oh, stay away from it. You know, the restaurant's probably fine now and under new management or whatever, but people just have that.
Well, like,
you know,
if there's a bunch of Tea Party tards that hate Obama because they think he's a secret Muslim and blah, blah, blah. And then maybe you don't like Obama because he sends drones to kill kids, supported the war in Libya, Syria, Ukraine, etc. But you might not be as vocal about that because you don't want to be associated with the people who just don't like him basically because he's black and they're thinking of other reasons that, you know, to mask that with and say why you think he's a Muslim, as if that's not just as stupid of a prejudice.
Right, right. I mean,
or he's born in Kenya or, you know, this kind of hair splitting nonsense. He didn't have a flag on his lapel when he said this pledge, or,
right,
you know.
Yeah, he wasn't.
Never mind
the
you know, advocating torture and any of that. The Wall Street scandals, the bailouts, the NSA spying. They can't talk about that stuff because, one, they supported all the same things when Bush was doing it. And two,
yes,
they don't really disagree with that. They just don't like the person. And so,
well, let me ask you something then. So, like, when you think that there's someone who's like, whose opinion matters, we all of our opinions matter and stuff, but when you're like talking to someone who has an audience also, and you're like, hey, how, where do you start? How do you frame 9/11?
Well, it was like,
Adam
Kukesh used to be like, nope, on 9/11, because all he'd ever heard of it was Alex Jones, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I, at the time, I had no way to reach him or be on his show or anything until he allowed people to vote to who would be the next guest. And other than Ron Paul, I was the highest rated person. The reason everybody wanted me to go on the show was they knew I could talk sense about 9/11. And I did, and I didn't even have time to get into all of it. I talked mostly about the Iraq War. But he watched War by Deception, said the production value sucked, but the message is on. But from that point on, he's been sold on 9/11, you know. And I'm hoping to do the same thing when I go on the Eddie Bravo show. If I can get people like Joe Rogan or so to listen to it,
yeah,
then someone, and Eddie, I think, already agrees with me. But if I can get other people to listen to it, like Scott Horton and I have had so many conversations about it, you know. And he understands there's my circle, and then there's like the kook circle, you know.
Right.
People who have radio shows and stuff, I try and talk to them individually. But to, as far as like what to bring up first I listen to them and to figure out what they think and see how much of it they know or don't. So a lot of people usually understand that the Iraq war was falsely associated with 9/11. Maybe not the specifics, but they remember them just saying Saddam bin Laden, you know, over and over in the media. And I can get into about the Prague meeting and the anthrax and all. Oh, do you remember that? Do you remember these notes? Explain that chunk of it.
Right.
Explain the like WMDs the and all that and say, like, these same people from the same group in PNAC have Bin Laden's picture on their July issue. And they're talking about Iraq and anthrax and a new Pearl Harbor prior to the event. And then they're underlings. And then I get into the Israeli spy rings, and that also associates the anthrax with the death of American Israel on it, as well as the Prague meeting and so on, and Michael Ledeen and Gurbanov, all that. If they're a smart person, I can start talking about all the names, and I don't have to stop and explain what the position means or anything. And it just takes some time, but I don't have a formula per se, but it kind of depends on what they know already. And then I'm saying, all right, so you got that and you got that. And I try and fill in the holes. And I'll go through the whole hijacker narrative, how Al-Mihdhar, for example, or Al-Hazmi from the USS Cole bombing were openly living in the United States with the real names. And right. There's a Saudi gate agent on loan living in their house. And how we had all this information on Muhammad Atta. You know, we had his phone number. We had his associates. We had his bagman who ended up being in Syria getting tortured. And
the FBI all together.
So, just walk through the whole thing. And I think even for someone that wouldn't understand all that, go, man, there's no way you made all that up.
This is too
complicated. And to start to say, okay, well, yeah, it makes sense. We know they lied about this, this, and this. We knew who was telling it. And I think the anthrax is a big deal because they had Stephen Hatfield and Bruce Ivins. And that case never was resolved. But it was because Bruce, after he was suicided, or committed suicide either way, was still exonerated because he didn't have the gear to make the anthrax. And he could not have been in Florida and New Jersey within just a day apart and been back at work in Maryland without getting any plane tickets or anything. It's just not physically possible. Either he didn't do it alone or he didn't do it at all. So either way, blaming everything on him has to be wrong. Yeah.
Right.
Same like the Litvinenko scandal, unrelated, but explaining things like that and proving you're not a kook and proving you know what you're talking about is necessary to talk about things that aren't directly related to 9/11 to show, see, I have analysis and I have this, I'm not, parroting stuff. And then you get into 9/11 because you have to build up their confidence and trust to show that you're not just sloganeering crap like no building ever fell from fire, but this is meaningless to people, you know. So usually buildings aren't hit by Boeing 757s either. So and it's kind of a class C argument to say, well, you know, building 3 through 6 all had pieces of the World Trade Centers falling on top of them, yet none of them disintegrated, you know. Building 7, which had the least amount of debris hit it, completely fell apart. You know? But that's still just like, interesting, but not concrete, you know?
Right. I mean, I think it's kind of like, well, people go, well.
Did I lose recording for a second?
No.
Oh, the light. No, good. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm still here. Sorry.
Okay. No, it's great. It's like with, When we had, with Building 7, I think that, like, you know, it's, well, once and knows the history of how these operations go down, I think that, like, the Building 7 thing is real clear, but, some groups of people.
But it just tells you what didn't happen, and it doesn't tell you what did happen.
But exactly. I think there's some groups of people that decided that Building 7 is the key, and if we just hammer on Building 7, that's going to blow up the whole thing. I think that might work for some people, but I think
you're just going to get the lowest common denominator, the kind of people that will believe any conspiracy you tell them anyway. So there's the same people that are the Sandy hoaxers and everything else. So yeah, they believed you on Building 7, but guess what? They would have believed you anyway, no matter what
they
said.
So
Plus, they over-exaggerate on that. So there are only pockets of fire. That's not true. The other side of the building was absolutely on fire. That's still, you know, asymmetrical fires don't cause a symmetrical collapse. But you cannot exaggerate about it. Because if you do any exaggerating, and someone goes and looks it up and realizes you're wrong about the fires, so you're wrong about everything, you know, because they're already doubting. So it is very important not to over-exaggerate any of the claims. I underplay everything in War by Deception. And people say, how come you didn't include X? I say, it's not that I don't believe X. It's just that if I couldn't prove it, it's not in the film. You know, you just stick with the Class A stuff. And then you can get into the kind of tertiary things like, does his cell phone work or not on a plane? Like, whatever. You know, like, that stuff is unnecessary because we have really hard evidence all over the place. So you don't need any of that.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, it's, it's on the left, I remember there being like such a difficulty for people. What was going on was the blowback theory stuff. And they were like, they want to think that like somehow basically Al-Qaeda existed in the way that people like the way that real organizations
totally independent from us. Yeah.
Right. And that this was like, they wanted to put it in their kind of context of national liberation, that these are like resistance fighters against imperialism. And they did this because it's like, because of the Palestinians and the whatever. And it's like, you know, like it fit their narrative, and you know, their narrative isn't like wrong per se, but it's just too cookie cutter. And it's like, you can't apply these one size fits all things. And they didn't want to look at the fact that, you know, in the 80s that that bin Laden was like, they knew that stuff, and they didn't deny it, but they just have this problem of, you know, and I try to explore this, and I, you know, a lot of my people, like my audience and people I talk to, like, are leftists or Marxists, former leftists and stuff like that. And for them, the big hang up was like always that, you know, the idea that governments are capable of engaging in this level of intelligence and planning and you know, covert work, I think it undermined their optimism that people could like rise up and overthrow the government, because it made them feel like...
Well, another thing is the stigma on certain issues. Like, if you're going to talk about Israel, that's hard enough already. There's a sort of a religious association, an ethnic association thing. So you bring it to something more neutral, like Operation Washtub or something, where they completely lied to get a war going, and, you know, focus on Guatemala or Nicaragua or something where they don't have as big of a personal investment in the conflict. Iran-Contra is a good one. Yeah. To say,
there it is.
This is what happened, and Israel and the United States worked together in Iran-Contra too, and some of the same players, you know, the commission set up was headed up by Dick Cheney and Lee Hamilton for Iran-Contra. And the 9/11 commission was also, again, Lee Hamilton.
Right.
And some of the same figures that did the same whitewash. You know, that's in my film. So if you can find a more neutral event, depending on who you're talking to, so from Guatemala, then you might want to use a different example. Operation Ajax in Iran or something, or Susanna in Egypt, or something that's less, you know, related to them, so that they can listen to it without such a bias and so many emotional triggers.
Right.
But if you're going to talk about the Palestinians or something, then, yeah, it's hard because people are so invested in that. And plus it's current. They're dying now, so, yeah.
And you have a piece coming up or a project you're working on, and you're going to look at the history of Zionism and AIPAC in Washington, going back to what, Kennedy, or?
I'm going back a little bit before Kennedy. Back to the OSS anyway, because I've already done film from about psych warfare in World War II. But yeah, Kennedy, I'm going to do a film on Kennedy. John Kennedy, just by itself. But I did a film called Decades of Deception, which just sort of followed the shenanigans of the Dulles brothers in the beginning, all the way up into about 95. I think the Oklahoma City bombing or so was the last of it. And then I did 9/11 real fast at the end, because I couldn't just not say anything. But it was just an overview of covert operations. What I'd like to do is now go back and focus on instead of the CIA, talking about the Mossad and the Israeli lobby, and do the same timeline and show how they're involved in all the same events I just talked about. So that's one of my ideas. But the next project's JFK. I'm actually going to Los Angeles. I'm going to interview a JFK researcher. James DiGenio, I got his book right here. It's pretty good. And my idea is to get several of these authors and let them say their piece, rather than talking about the CIA, the mob, or whatever their angle is.
Right.
And then I'm going to put it together, because I think everybody's missing a little bit. And the best thing to do is to stand on the shoulders of all these people who have already done all the really, really hard work, and then do the easier task. To me, it's easier of putting it together. Say, all right, this is true and this is true, then this is also true. And it's something that just couldn't be done until post-internet. You know, just until the internet, you couldn't do
it. It's a technological thing. Yeah, you look at prior attempts, like Oliver Stone's, you know, film. He tried to, like, kind of look at some of the preeminent works and kind of piece it together. But
his film was financed by an Israeli arms dealer. So there was no mention of Israel in that entire film. They talked about everything else. CIA, the mob, the MIC. No mention of Israel and Kennedy challenging them on their nuclear program, or giving the Palestinians a right of return and all that. You know, and when they're talking about the mob, which they kind of brushed that away too, and say, well, could the mob have covered it up? But, you know, there's not a clear line between the mob and the CIA or the Mossad. You always outsource.
Right.
We're doing that now in Syria with al-Nusra, like, or the FSA. It's not like they are the CIA. Of course they're not. But guess where they're getting their money and the guns and everything else? Like, you always outsource to Contras, to the militia, to the mafia. In Japan, it's to the Yakuza. In China, it's the Triads, to the Chechens, to the whatever, you know. That's a common theme throughout history. And but their idea of the mob is the Hollywood, see, you want a knuckle sandwich? Like a bunch of Italian guys in zoot suits with Tommy guns or whatever. And
so James
very
Tacky.
Little of that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Organized crime is white collar too, and it's big.
So, right. I mean, it's like a lot of businesses crime. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah. Well, my idea is here on this board, I'm going to put the whole Lansky, Costello, and name people, show the whole networking, you know, and explain a bunch of preliminary stuff about how mobs work and organized crime works. And then I'm going to do the same thing with the CIA, which is really also organized crime, in my opinion.
right. It's the same mechanism.
And then get into it, you know, instead of assuming people know. Because a lot of you start throwing out names, no one knows who these people are, you know, unless they're one of those people that reads mafia books. They don't know. So,
So you're going to look. So you're going to look at basically, you know, I heard you mention before that I think this is like common currency too. That like basically like the Soviets got out of this like Israel game at some point, and they're like, you know, they got behind the Pan-Arabists, and you know, and they tried to basically.
Well, it started because they got the contracts for Anwar Dam in Egypt.
Right.
You know, that whole thing got botched with the British trying to maintain that buffer zone for the Suez Canal and control that as his British Empire was falling apart after World War II.
Right.
And so the Levant Affair or Operation Susanna, that whole war is skipped. People always go right to the 67 war, Six-Day War, and they don't talk about the war in the 50s at all.
Right.
It was clearly started by a false flag. And the British and French ganged up on Egypt with the Israelis. But that kind of became the breaking point, because it pushed Egypt right into the arms of the Soviets. It absolutely couldn't go the other direction. And so then suddenly, that's when Israel becomes the ally. But it was more from Johnson, because of the whole JFK thing. He was sleeping with an Ergun terrorist, Matilda Krim, on the day the war broke out. And he said, don't worry about it. And he tried to get the USS Liberty sunk. So he was absolutely an Israeli man. And they had him by the balls. He killed the president together. So, yeah. It's a long thing, but that's my plan.
Yeah.
Is to explain it. I hate just saying the conclusion, because it's a sound. You cannot sloganeer.
Right.
You've just got to go, here we go. and then get right to the conclusion when you get to it. Yeah.
No, look, if the glove don't fit, you must have quit.
Yeah, even when your you hand's open and you're trying to put it on.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. You know, it's a shortcut, and I think it's demagogic, and it has a short-term effectiveness, and long term it burns people out.
The neocons started the war in Iraq. That's true, but it doesn't really explain anything. You know,
right?
Which and ones? Also, who are they? Say how they do it? You know,
right.
So and also, even people, if I told you who the shooters were. So, do you know right who those people are if I told you? You know what I mean? Like,
right, of course.
Yeah, you got to have the story, right?
Well, so the problem with the neocon angle is it's true, but the problem is that it's been covered by, you know, people like in the earlier days of Counterpunch or like mainstream or print magazines like The Nation, Mother Jones.
It was all incompetence and blowback.
You know, it was incompetence, and then they also successfully planted this meme that the neocons are Republicans, so they didn't.
They're
so
all
like
leftists.
Right. Well, right. I mean, you're talking about like Crystal and you know Trotskyists and stuff like that, and you know they had
like Justin Raimondo talking about that history some, but you're right. Most of the kind of left leaning Counterpunch style papers
like,
and things were sold.
Neocons, right. They basically kind of got this whole Bush-hating thing and made it be about electing Democrats because the neocons were Republicans, you know, and then they made it be like this Democrat versus Republican thing, but boom, the minute Obama gets elected, boom, who's his cabinet, right? You've got like, you know, Kagan's wife, Victoria Nuland, in there doing the whole thing with Ukraine, and it's like...
Yeah, Rahm Emanuel, Summers, you know.
Right, Summers, right, they're all there, and people like, it's like people got some kind of... I'm talking about that last, I don't know, 30% of the population that are Obama supporters, and then say the 20% of them who think about it, right? I mean, so I don't know what must be 8% of the population that are like the diehard Obama supporters, and they're like, no, Obama's like at war with the neocons, but okay, so why do you put him on the cabinet? I mean, well, it's because, you know, he's trying
how
to,
come
like, it's like, dude.
When he was a senator... He voted for keeping the Patriot Act, voted to put sanctions on Iran, voted all everything.
No,
he
voted,
said yes
he had to be
everything.
Electable. No, he knew he was going to run for president, and he had to be electable, and he couldn't, you know, he couldn't stand out on
now,
his issue.
And give him some time. Just give him more time. They're going to say that to his eighth year. Just give him more time. And then the final excuse is, well, he got in, he tried to do it, and it's Congress that wouldn't let him. Yeah, just endless rationalizations. Like, he didn't even try to close Gitmo. It's not like I said this on RT and their eyes got like that big because I said they thought I was going to blame Republicans. I go, no, he never intended on closing Gitmo. He wanted to relocate it to Chicago, you know, and profit from it more. There are 164 more people there now than there were before. And it'd be one thing if he introduced a bill or, you know, and then Congress said no or and overruled him, but he didn't. See, so it isn't the Congress going against his wishes, and he's like, "Oh, I tried everything, and they just overruled me." No, he never did anything to try and close Gitmo. It's just lip service. Yeah, we'll close it, but only going to close it so he could relocate it. They shot down his relocation program, but now he's expanded it, and that is one of the smallest torture camps anyway. You know what they do is they focus on the most mild form of torture, which is the waterboarding, which is torture.
Right.
But they're not even talking about the dry boarding and the other more disgusting things that are done to people. And they focus on one of the smallest torture camps, which is in Cuba. Not the salt pits in Romania or like, you know, Abu Ghraib and things like the prisons and the... Nope. So it's very clever of them to focus on the most mild end of the camps and the most mild end of the torture itself and act like that's the issue when it's not at all. They do the same thing with universal health care. They always make fun of Canada, which has the worst version of it in the world. Cherry picking.
Right.
Classic cherry picking.
Yeah, classic. I mean, it's like one of the things that makes me think of is how, you know, when you have like basically people get caught up in the party politics, and we talked about like the tribalism, and then like how the whole way people talk and think about it gets kind of like manipulated, right? And it's you know, people I think are starting to see. I mean it's like, I remember, you know, because I was like already politically active before the internet, right? I mean, I was like, you know, before the internet was out, I was already like,
yeah,
I know, right? Believe me. Well, on the one hand, you always met people in person, you know, and like, you know,
I was screaming about why we need a line item veto in fifth grade, getting into arguments on the bus.
Yeah,
our school was so small, we rode the bus with the high school, middle school students, and everything get together. Because I grew up on an island, and we had K-12. So I had kids older on there, and I would say, well, you got to cut the pork out of the bills, and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Like, why do you even know what a line item veto is, kid? But
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, it was like, and they had, you know, with the whole way that people, like, see politics is that, like, the kind of, like, the people who are pushing in the inner circles of organizers. I'm not talking about the rich or the powerful. I'm talking about your grassroots party activists, whether Republicans, Democrats. They like focus on these issues, like on the, with Republicans, like school prayer or something, or with Democrats, like something with maybe feminism or you know, health
or something.
Gay marriage is the better example, because healthcare is an issue that's pretty serious. But I mean, it's like here are like really tangential non-issue issues. I mean, really, I mean, it's like, you know, people have always had the right to pray. Kid can always, like, you know, sit there and think about God all he wants, you know.
Yeah,
you know what
know,
I mean?
You know?
I mean, and
you just can't
and,
do the hand gesture or whatever.
Yeah, right. And I think that you can do the hand gesture. You just can't, the teacher can't lead the prayer, or they can't card the, I mean, it's all these details.
Whatever.
It ended up being.
Yeah.
So, and then, like, or we're like, you know, I'm not trying to like dissect these issues in order to prove that they're tertiary, but like, you know, with the gay marriage, it's like, you know, gay people have always had the right to form a limited partnership or a corporation, or, you know, they've always been able to create wills and designate legal rights for hospital and so forth. I mean, there's really nothing. It was just like kind of like these diversionary issues, and I'm not at all homophobic, nor am I anti-religious.
Well, just think if somebody's a couple, but they're not married yet, and you still can't go visit them, you know? Like, those rules are stupid all by themselves, anyway, you know?
They were all stupid in the first place, and, like, you know, the question arose whether the state should even be involved in marriage at all for anybody, right?
You shouldn't be giving out special rights based on whether or not someone's married, straight or not. And, yeah, no special rights, period.
There
you
go.
You have rights because you're a
person.
That's
all.
No categories.
But people get behind these stuff, and it's like they're totally... And they think that they're like aware and conscious, or that they're, you know, or that they're moral and they're upright and they're fighting for something. It's like, man, you've got this government and these corporations murdering millions of people, Ben. Like, what is this like fixation with these like freaking policy tweaks? It's like, and I know it's cliched, but it's like they're rearranging the furniture on the deck of the Titanic. I mean,
yeah.
Like, this is, how can they ignore the cliche 800-pound gorilla in the room? I mean, it's like, it boggles the mind, but then you realize
when Ron Paul was running, people say, well, I like his economics, but not his foreign policy. I said, how can you divorce the two? The foreign policy costs us $1 trillion a year.
Right. You can't divorce the two.
It's
right.
Not in my category, though. It's so
right.
Weird.
Right. It's, gosh, it's, you know, solution-wise... I you know, my sense is that, like, because, I mean, you know about how intelligence organizations work, and I don't know if your research has taken you to how they, like, infiltrate and penetrate resistance movements, too, within the U.S.
Yeah.
Like
COINTELPRO.
COINTELPRO, right. Mm. So my concern is, like,
you saw
how
that
are
in Ferguson with the Uncle Tom's coming to town.
Right, yeah. So how are we going to get past that? I mean, it's like how you build a grassroots movement. How do you organize? And you're going to be, the FBI is going to be all over you. There's going to be assassinations. There's going to be kidnappings and torture.
Yeah, what I think is, you don't really need a group, you know, like in the future. I think this is how it's going to roll. I have anti-neocons because I have to have some name for a website, you know, so people can find it. But it's not a group. It's like, if it's an idea, like, are you against war? Are you for freedom? Are you for this? You know, and why I see this weird phenomenon where you see people like mothers against drunk driving or something. Well, we're all against drunk driving. You know, why do you have to be a mom? Or dad's against drunk driving, or, you know, the something something's against whatever, and it's all groups. You know, women against blah, blacks against blah, whatever.
Right.
And it's like what Gilad Osman says, people defining themselves as a X. It's the as a blah, I think this. And that limits your group, because all the other people who may agree with your idea but don't fit into your biological definition can't participate.
Right.
And so we've got to stop this, you know, even like youth against war or something like that. That's a pretty broad group, but still a group. Just say, look, these are the policies we're against, and we have no sexual or biological type of requirement for you to join this. And so when we get past this sort of factionalism, it's sectarianism, but not religion, but it's, you know, it's the same principle. We cannot divide ourselves and be the women or the men or the pigmen or whatever. We've got to just be individuals and say, that's why my name is an anti. See, if anything else can be hijacked. We say you're a part of Occupy. Well, if Occupy becomes a quasi-commie group, then you don't want to be, or if you're a Tea Partier and that got hijacked to be, you know, Sarah Palin or whatever. But if you're an anti-neocon, the only way to change that is they have to change what a neocon is, which they're not going to do. They're going to change themselves. So by saying what you're against, at the same time tells you what you're for. As if I'm not for pointless war, means I am for meaningful peace, and so on. But I think people say, well, anti is negative. Like, and? So?
Right.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with hating something terrible.
Right. I mean, I think that's, there's I'm not like hardcore Darwinian or something, but there are reasons that we have emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that a lot of them are biologically derived. We have a capacity to hate, and, you know, just like we have a capacity to love, and we feel hunger and sorrow and stuff, we, you know, and our emotions come, are kind of like our immune system, or they're like our, and they're part of our, who we are. We can't deny that we have emotions. And, you know, one of the things I look at is sort of like how in, I'm something of a Western cultural critic, as all people who look at some of my work. I mean, I attack the sort of, you know, liberal framework of, and I don't mean in the left-wing sense, but I attack the sort of the, you know, the liberal framework in terms of how people, we talked about how you can't talk about politics and religion. That's something I'm critical about.
Yeah.
Or, you know, how the people who, you know, wear glasses, like, you know what, I'm sorry, I have good genes for eyesight. I read like a mofo. Like, I read, you know, more than most people, right? But it's like, but I don't wear glasses, and you know what I'm saying? And so I'm not smart, you see? And these are the kind of things that, like, in Anglo culture are really, really, I think, and I'm not
just
saying
silly stereotypes,
like,
yeah.
Right. In liberal culture, it's like silly stereotypes. It's kind of like what a stupid person's idea of what a smart person looks like.
If you're
like,
an athlete, you must be dumb. Things like that, you know?
Yeah,
like,
right. And
stupid
that's
stuff.
Like, in Eastern Europe, that's unheard of. You have, like, people who are athletes who are also, like, doctors of chemistry, or, you know, people can be, like, rounded individuals. And it's, like, the strange thing, and I don't mean it, like, as a condemnation, but rather, like, as a prescription for change, that, like, one of the things that I think connects to why people think about 9/11 all wrong is because they associate things with groups. Like, people who wear glasses are smart. People who wear ties are professional. People,
blondes,
you know,
are dumb,
but we
do all agree redheads are crazy. That's actually scientifically proven.
Yeah, right. My father is a redhead, but, you know, so I'm gonna let you do the talking on that point. But you know, he knows what I think. But I mean, I think it's like, you know, with the redheads, you got me there, man.
I'm mildly red green colorblind, so I can't even actually tell
Are you
when someone
serious?
has red hair. That's why it's funny when I say it. And so people who
Okay.
know me know that's an inside joke. Well, I'm always picking on redheads.
Oh wow. Yeah, I mean it's like it's like
I just
people
guess, you
think
know, if they're talking to themselves on the train and banging their head in the window, they probably have red hair.
So you see gray or are you so you don't
No, it looks
distinguish the
brown or whatever. Like, I can see red and green. I just can't see all the shades of it. I have color
Oh, okay.
saturation blindness, what it's called. So, pink, I usually think is white. And some, like mint green, I think is gray or whatever. And most people have red hair. It's not really like Coca-Cola red, right? It's like
Right.
reddish brown or
Right.
something.
It's like a copper
So,
brown.
to
Yeah.
me, it looks like brown. So,
So
yeah.
you have to figure out if they're redhead from like a test.
I can
You
only
have to
know
like
if they have like Ronald McDonald level red hair.
Well,
Mary
that
Jane or
explains your
something.
background. That explains like the
That's
color
why
like
I'm always yeah, probably my colors are so extreme to everyone else, it's
Right,
probably they're a little
right.
bit more mild to me. So
Right, those ones that you can see, right. Right. Okay.
yeah.
Yeah. Well, what I was the train I was kind of on, and you know, you don't have to stick on it, but it was kind of like how people think in terms of group stuff and like, you know, people wearing glasses are smart, athletes aren't smart and stuff like that. Then it's like, oh, people who question the 9/11 narrative and are looking at the real facts, oh, they're David Icke, reptilian, you know, Madame Blavatsky, you
And
know,
reverse,
over.
like if you won't question 9/11, it's you're just an idiot and a sheep and not awake. Where there are a lot of very intelligent people who
Lots.
don't know about 9/11 because they never really dug into it, because the first people they heard talking about it or the first thing they Googled on it went to Alex Panic Attack Jones, and they go, "Oh, it's one of those," you know.
Right. Why does Alex do that? Is that his, like, that's advertising thing, or he's,
I don't
you
know if
know,
he's
but
dumb enough to believe it or if he's just a sincere fear-mongering bullshit salesman. I think he's just an opportunist that found a market, because he doesn't seem dumb enough to actually believe in some of the stuff he's said, like juice boxes make you gay or, you know, like, come on, that guy
yeah.
knows better. He found a niche. It's a business, you know.
Yeah. I can see, like, I
That's
mean,
why
I'm
War
not
by
this is
Deception will never, ever be on. They'll have every 9/11 kook. But from many people's opinion, that's one of the best films, or at least should be counted as one of the films, you know.
I
And you'll
agree.
never, ever see that on Jonestown, because I actually named people. Like,
Right.
and it destroys everything he's ever said about it. So he's not interested in what's true, or even debunking something if he thinks it isn't. He just wants to sell fear to people, and I really think he's a businessman. And
Yeah.
I don't think he believes half the shit he says.
Yeah. I mean, not to like digress on the small shit or whatever, but I mean, if you look at his actual shtick, like he's using a fake voice. If you've ever looked at like his early recordings, like this is back before the internet
Oh, watch
when
him do stand-up
like,
comedy. He turns it on and off like a switch.
right. He turns it on and off like a switch. And when I look, when he's telling stuff, it's like that he doesn't believe. You can look in his eyes, and he's got like he goes like he makes his eyes big, and you're like, dude, you're lying. Like, come on. I've met that salesman before. He's come to my, you know, met him at the car
He
dealership. He's come to my,
is like a car salesman a lot.
it's like, you know, but it's but the thing is that like he uses the fear mongering, and he actually becomes the avatar. I mean, he actually channels the aggression. If you actually study his body language, and like he's talking about how these other people are fear mongers and are controlling you with fear, and I think he believes that, but I also think that he
He
also
told
has a certain
people that the elites are going to live in bunkers in New Zealand, because James Cameron moved to New Zealand, not to live in a bunker, just a house. But he took a story about James Cameron moving to New Zealand to mean all the elite, you know, the Hollywood, the people in the know, are going to go live in bunkers, and they're going to release a biovirus and kill 80% of the population, blah, 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 blah. Started cussing in his video, did it like an emergency announcement, with just curtains behind him, like he didn't even have time to get to his studio or whatever, you know. Like, he's just full of shit. That's, I mean, He's just full of shit. I don't know what's wrong with the guy, but I know he's made a pretty penny off of it, so that's his thing. And he has got every right to do that, because it's the consumer's fault if they're buying into it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is his view of people, is that if they buy it, I think he has that kind of market-oriented morality, which, you know...
Yeah, it's like, well, it's your fault for believing me. I was like, no, you're also to blame for lying.
Right.
You know, like.
Right. He's a willing, I mean, he's right. And it's, but I think, like, for some people, and I can only speak from experience, I haven't seen a study or anything, but, like, I think that Alex Jones was, like, a good gateway. I mean, a lot of people kind of early on before he, like, jumped the shark, right? Like, people kind of, like, were exposed to things, like, in the especially before YouTube and before kind
they
of
started
like,
with him, then they graduated.
There you go.
And that's something I hear a lot, and I go, yeah, but the only reason you started with him is because he acts as a 9/11 dragnet on Google. And so you had to start with him because you couldn't find the other stuff, because he's everywhere. And so had he not been in the way, you would have found the stuff you graduated to immediately. So it's not like he helped springboard you into something better. He just distracted you for a number of years until you found something better. So he's still worthless.
Right. No, I follow that. Yeah,
I gotta wrap it up. But I do appreciate all your work on Ukraine, especially, and I think this was a good conversation. And let's do more interviews in the future, man.
Hey, let's do it, man. I'm glad we were able to do this.
Excellent. All right. Well, have a good day.
All right. I'll see you, Ryan.